patch cords.
No, the cords are fine. The cords are new and lifetime guaranteed.
Okay, so you just want new microphones.
I do want to replace these microphones. Because, I realized this week, and I shot you guys a text message. I got a social media memory. 6 years ago this week, we soft released the Prince episode.
Yeah, you
to
would
our
think
friends.
You
and then we recorded two more.
You would think the microphone would last longer than 5.5 years.
You would think, but yeah.
Well, it didn't need to because we didn't have these microphones at first.
We had the Yahtzee box. Everybody brought their own mic.
These are 5.5 year old microphones. These things here.
Yeah, but I did tote them around for quite a while.
Yeah, you even beat the
shit
out.
And that's what
of
I'll do is I'll take these and put these in the tote around kits, and the new ones will just stay here. Don't worry about it. I'm going to get the same things, I think. But, yeah, 6 fucking years, y'all.
Mm-hmm. So you're gonna get the same shitty microphones as these?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Why would we upgrade? The next upgrade is, like,
I don't know,
a lot of money.
For the price.
Maybe it says.
For the price, we could just throw these away.
Mm-hmm.
Sense of
these are throwaway microphones.
Dignity.
And I finally figured out how to mix with these things and get them adjusted relatively well. It's at least listenable. So, well, depending on whose review you're reading, but that's it, you know. At least it's listenable to me.
Yeah, I kind of resent these people who, like, are on about the sound.
Yeah.
It's like,
although most of those are older.
Yeah, you see, I don't care.
Because you never listen to it.
Well, and I just don't give a shit.
But, like, you know, if you're on about the sound, it's like, you know, what, I know that you got some shitty Technique speakers. Stereo or something like
nah,
that.
Nah, they're listening to it through their Beats or something.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Something like that. Or, like, you know, you're one of these, like, vintage people who thinks, like, Realistic is a great brand.
Realistic is okay in 8-track players because that's one of the companies that made them consistently for a long time.
Well,
that was called Radio Shack.
That mm-hmm. says it all. Okay in 8-track
players. I know because
players.
I bought them there.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're listening to 8-track players, like, you really should just, you know, watch the news or something.
So I do
go
listen,
get a newspaper.
So speaking of sound quality, I do listen to this very highly produced a number of different podcasts, but this one in particular is an audio drama, and it's a post-apocalyptic. And it's there's a giant blackout. Blackout has washed across the whole world, right? Or at least America at this point. And some guy has a generator and an 8-track player and a giant S collection 8-tracks because he's like, when we get back to this analog world, people are going to love this shit. They actually put that in the podcast. So I'm not the only one that thinks that it's going to be good again.
What the hell are you talking about?
That 8-tracks can be, like...
Yeah, of all the things that I would waste the power from a generator on, it would not be a shitty 8-track player.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, in the apocalypse? Why? No. Uh-uh.
Like, literally anything, like...
Absolutely anything else than a shitty 8-track player.
Like, a Foreigner cassette found underneath the seat in a Ford Pinto.
Yeah, that goes...
I would play that before any 8-track...
Machine Head on 8-track, motherfucker, is great.
Yeah.
I would rather hear Enya.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would rather hear Enya.
Enya.
I would rather Orinoco flow that bitch all up and down the West Coast.
You're going to look badass driving down the road in your Mad Max car listening to Enya.
I got the dog for it.
You do have that dog.
You know, if you're in the Mad Max car, like, listening to Enya, it's sort of like you're in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and the country westerns playing in the background.
Oh, yeah.
It's, like, discordant enough, it's, like, actually enhances the creepy. You're actually tougher.
It is, know. Lynchian.
Yeah.
So, you know. Yeah, you know, I might have to invest in some Enyas.
It is Enya. A little Lynchian. I have it on cassette. We could probably burn it into the micro or burn it in through the computer. I can just put that song on loop.
Or I
can
just download the damn thing.
That's true. Or you don't.
I probably already have it.
You could probably just stream it real easy. You know, the internet works that way nowadays. You could just type it in. We could all listen to it right now.
I remember, like, it was like I was staying at my kid's mom's house, like, when she lived in Birmingham, and I was out here in Oregon, and it was before she was
Birmingham, Alabama. Just to check.
Yeah, and okay. It was before, like, she was my kid's mom. She was just like my little hottie. And, like, she was like, okay, so I'm going to go to work, and you can just stay here and then meet me for lunch or something. It was like, wow, you're leaving me alone in your apartment? Like, that never happens. And so, like, I was just like, well.
Underwear drawer.
What do we do now? And I was just like, well, I could put on some music. And I found, like, 3 Enya CDs. And I was just like, you know, If I wasn't like 2,000 miles away from home, I would leave right now and never call again.
Well,
like,
for what it's worth, you're only about 20 miles from home, and I have at least 2 Enya cassettes.
Yeah, but like
I never say anything about music that makes me sound cooler.
Yeah, no, but like
no, you should just quit talking. Actually,
we're not engaged in any sort of carnal manner. You know,
other than this for 6 years.
So that
years.
Sort of right. Like loses something.
Well, for what it's worth, I love you too. Should we do this?
I thought it was like cool that like you could take like a girlfriend story and make it all about you though. That was sort of
I'm cool. Good at that too, yes.
That was sort of interesting.
Alright, so let's do this. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone else listening, we are Ruined Heroes.
Oh, thanks for saying we.
Hey, you.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's deserved. The virtue signal bell. That was deserved.
We are a weekly free and self-produced podcast wherein the three of us irreverently discuss a topic of societal...
Here we go.
Yeah, shit.
Yeah.
Of societal renown.
It's like literally single digits worth of words in.
I, Tyler, study like a guy who might travel through time. John.
I'm going to be locked up in an asylum.
Nice. Well done. And Rupert.
I hate you.
I love you. Please subscribe.
I know the love-hate matrix. this day is going to go on.
Please subscribe and leave good ratings and reviews on whatever podcast feed you get us through. It's free for you. It helps us with exposure and shit. To interact with us, we are ruinedheroespod@gmail.com, as well as easily found on Facebook and Twitter, where you get weekly hints. Say hi, take a guess. If you would like to get extra content as well as help with the cost of the show, you can subscribe at patreon.com/ruinedheroes and get in starting at just $1 a month. There are upper tiers. Like we'll send you a thank you note, shit like that. Links are in the show notes.
Because that's what you want in life.
I mean, signed thank you note. Hand
it is.
Signed.
So that when
mostly
because
we can't afford an auto pen.
And because you're crazy.
Or a secretary.
Yeah.
And because you're crazy enough to give us your address. I mean... Wow.
Well,
I hadn't thought about that, John, but that's
sure.
You're right. Although a lot of these addresses haven't been in Bulgaria, but you know, that's wow, I hadn't thought about that, but like wow, that's a level of trust I usually
so
don't reach.
For what it's worth, written into that tier, there is a if you don't want to give us your address, we get it clause.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly how I worded it, but it's something like that. I get why you.
If
might
you are smart enough
us.
To not have us show up on your doorstep,
yeah, we kind of respect you more. Actually, yeah.
I don't know the people that are daring enough to tell us where they're from.
Yeah,
I'm into
nobody,
it.
Nobody has told us where. Well, there's been one or two that's been in this country,
mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
But quite far away.
Mm-hmm.
Like it took like a few extra stamps,
and then there's a couple that. Like
we live
friends,
in the South.
There's a couple that are friends of the show that we know yeah. And can't drive to their houses, too. So there's that.
Oh,
there's that element as
that's
well.
That's true. Uh-huh. That's true.
But anyway, all right.
Thank you to those special friends.
Thank you to all of you to do that.
Thank you to everybody.
There are
even
there,
if you think about us, that's better
even,
than anybody
else. Even if you
else
write
does.
Shitty reviews, thank you. It gives us something to talk about.
Actually, if you write shitty reviews, it's some of our best talking points.
Jesus. There's links to all this Patreon shit. In the notes and
sorry,
on the
did
webpage.
I flabbergast you?
Yeah, a little bit. I got involved. It
you
was
got
my
gobsmacked.
Own fault. I should not engage.
I think you were overinvested.
I still am, obviously. Anyhow, there's links on the show notes as well as on our website, ruinedheroes.com, where you can also find the older episodes. We already did the thank you part, but thank you guys.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, especially to those who do give.
Jesus. All right. These I only got 2 hints because I told you the cataclysmic story when you were showing up, and I realized I had not.
Yeah, get on
notes.
With it.
Well, plus the lead-in was also you weren't too enthused.
Yeah.
Like 2 days ago, you told me you weren't into it.
Yeah, I expected to find something. And,
okay, one of the things you need to understand here, Rupert, is when he gives me a shitty shitty 3 topics to choose from,
yeah.
A lot of times I'll choose the shittiest one of the shittiest 3.
Just to be a shitty.
Yeah.
Yes.
Shitty, bang,
bang. It does
bang.
It just to
yeah.
Fuck with me.
Yeah, I mean, if he's going to send me this kind of crap,
there were definitely.
I'm
going to
bring
stories.
Rupert into my side, and we're both going to give you all kinds of shit today.
There were definitely better stories with the other two.
John, you're like
that I gave
you're
you.
Like just like a big bald 3D chessboard. It's just like amazing. Wow, he's playing that shit. That's
Intro.
Like some psych.
Yeah, it's, I have to plan this shit out for like 2 weeks in advance.
Wow.
These are both said by the topic.
Just so inscrutable.
I was just very shy. I was never anxious to do talk shows as I didn't know what to say. And I don't feel I have any inherent interest. But as I'm getting older, I feel I want to be more or want to be able to share whatever I know if it means something to someone.
Phil Donahue.
No. This would be a person that was a guest on a talk show, not a host.
But that's not a job.
So I'm going to throw in a really,
that's
really
not a job.
Helpful hint here. Think quirky actors.
All right.
That was the grouping that I sent John was three quirky actors.
Now I see why John's response was as it
Fuck
was.
You.
So Jim Carrey?
No, but you're yes. I mean,
Jim Carrey would have provided a better topic.
Well, there's some. The guy has had some mental health struggles that have been rather public.
Man, do I hate Jim Carrey.
I don't love his movies, except for his serious roles. I generally really dig him in a serious role, oddly enough.
Yeah, oddly enough, that's still like, not the topic, is it?
Yeah, it isn't. the next hint. The next hint. My work up to then had been very uneven. I would be good one night, dull the next. Meisner made me aware of how to be consistent. Meisner is an acting coach, very famous acting coach. Meisner made me aware of how to be consistent in using the best that I have to offer. But I guess nobody can teach you the knack, or whatever it is, that helps you come to life on stage. Yeah, I know. Like I said, I panicked.
I'm not sure there's ever been a clue that you've given where... There's been clues you've given where it's like, I don't know.
I'll give you a hint. But Taxi.
Oh, fuck you. Are we doing Bob De Niro?
No. Not Taxi Driver. Taxi.
Quirky actors.
Yeah, Taxi. I know. Jim.
Yes, Jim.
Jim Ignatowski from Taxi.
And the actor's name is also Doc in Back to the Future.
Yeah, Back to the Future. I can't remember.
Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, okay. I don't care.
You're probably not going to care much in an hour.
So horrible. I don't know why you picked this. Who cares?
Now you know why I picked it, though.
This was the
yes, first. Sense, doesn't
now
it?
I know. Now I know. There we go. This is how those...
This was third in a trio because I was just trying to fill in the blanks, and he picked the fill-in-the-blank one again.
This just says like you just... This just says like you just don't care.
No, it's him trying to make us horrible.
This is like...
He's making it rot from the inside.
This is like we're in a relationship...
Embrace the suck.
I'm into it. I'm here.
This is like we're in a relationship. I've cooked 5 nights in a row. I ask you to cook dinner the next night.
Hot dogs.
And I show up and it's hot dogs. That's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
This is like zero effort. I have no idea why you're like doing anything on the computer looking for more on this, because thank God you found... Hopefully so small that this will be a short episode.
We haven't seen each other in 2 weeks. This is what I give you.
Yeah.
I
was on you had 2 weeks. You had 2 weeks. We only had things like the queen dying. I don't know. Inflation going crazy. I mean.
Dow dropping more than it had in 20 years yesterday.
Exactly. Exactly. I saw people in horse-drawn carriages on the way here. That's how bad it is. But. Nope, there we go. Jim Ignatowski. Let's do this played guy who hasn't done any acting in, like, since my kids were born. 30 years was the last time I saw this guy do anything, and he wasn't that great in anything other than Taxi, and then it was played out by the time, like, we were three quarters through the first season of Taxi.
I'm glad you're getting a wrap up out the beginning. So.
It's horrible.
Sources.
This might.
Sources.
This might rival the Marilyn Monroe rant.
Sir.
This might rival the Marilyn Monroe rant. My Sir. Feelings on this.
Jesus. Fuck. All right. Sources.
Bow to your sensei.
IMDb.com.
Hung like this.
Biography.com. TheFamousPeople.com. And I did have to use Wiki because, again, I said it was a shallow one.
Yeah. Okay, are you done?
Born. Did we do the podcast yet?
Born. It sure as hell feels like
this
it.
This is so shallow, it's like the...
Well, we're almost 15 minutes
this
in, that's
This is so
why.
Shallow, it's like the thin film of sperm on the toilet when you jerk off into
element,
it. That's
element,
how bad this
there's
is.
There's an element to it that I promise you will enjoy. So just the end.
Are you really promising?
I'm promising.
Uh-huh.
And it's not just the end.
If it's not, man,
But there's a number system involved.
Oh, shit.
If this doesn't pan out, I'm going to go tuna salad.
Born, it's not going to pan out.
I don't even know what that means.
But it's going to be interesting to find out.
Man, I want tuna salad now.
Born, me too, actually. I've been wanting it for about a week.
Yeah.
But I don't can my own tuna anymore.
No, I'm going to do
it. Don't dare buy tuna.
I'm going to get some smoked salmon and make tuna salad with smoked salmon. That's what I'm going to do.
All right, so
I could be doing that right now if I wasn't here doing this stupid episode.
It's actually amazingly good.
I know.
Smoked tuna is really good, too. Anyway, so born Christopher Allen Lloyd, October 22nd, 1939, in Stanford, Connecticut. The youngest of seven kids, but because it was 39, they all pretty much lived. To the parents Samuel Lloyd Jr., who was a lawyer, and Ruth Lapham, or Lapham, L-A-P-H-A-M, however it's said.
Lapham.
That's how I said it first, Lapham, a singer. His mom's brother was mayor of San Francisco. His mother's father co-founded Texaco Oil. And his family are direct descendants from John Howland, an indentured servant who came over on the fucking Mayflower. One of his brothers, Samuel III, was also an actor in the 50s through 60s. So, Silver Spoon. Can we just say Silver Spoon?
I don't know. It sounds
Surely indentured servant part, but like he was.
It sounds like you're saying he's black.
No.
I'm sorry.
Were plenty indentured servants that came over on the Mayflower. Just people. That was how they got. That's how they paid for their voyage across the ocean.
Yeah, but smoked salmon, cream cheese, a little white pepper. Mix that all up in there.
I don't know. Like if your family goes back to indentured servitude, I'm not into the silver spoon in the mouth thing. I don't think that's
true. But we got
a grandfather found helping found Texaco Oil. I mean that's
Texaco Oil is
But that's like you're actually doing real work. Doing real work. But like you know, if your parents have seven kids, you know, hey,
right,
you're
not exactly like. That's still living on the edge if the parents have seven kids.
Well, they grew up in Westport, Connecticut, a town that had started changing from a farm town to one filled with artists and writers, often from New York City. It was like the popular place to have a vacation home.
Oh, God, it's this shitty Woodstock of its day before Connecticut shifted over to selling insurance.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only industry in that state.
So nothing of note about what kind of student he was, but he got involved in theater at Summer Stock.
What kind of student he was.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I should retract my comment. If you're like, I think I shall go into the theater. That is a little bit Silver Spoon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It was
the
summer
theater.
It was Summer Stock when he was 14, and we've done the Summer Stock thing before.
So I'm going to be pretentious and spell it with the E on the end.
Is that like Woodstock 99?
No.
Because like there's
a lot of awkward fucking going on, but other than that.
Aqua fucking?
Aqua fucking.
Like in the hot tub?
And he went back to help form the Staples Players at his high school, Staples High School. So he formed
the Staples Players.
Yeah, because it was Staples High School, the Staples Players.
Because they made staples?
Jesus.
No, why was it Staples High School?
The high school was called Staples High School. I didn't look up why. It seemed pretty inconsequential.
Was it Staples, Connecticut?
It was in fucking fake Woodstock, Westport.
There's the Staples Singers. Isn't there like a band
called
the
Staples Singers?
Are the Staples Players kind of like the Ohio Players?
I don't fucking know.
There was the Staples.
Why is it Staples? I mean,
you better have another bottle of Jaeger in your truck.
There's Staples Stadium. Named after like the office supply store that kind of tanked.
Yeah, it was not.
Are they from?
It was not that.
Are they from Woodstock, Connecticut?
From Westport, fake Woodstock. Yes.
Yeah, but it's Staples.
You know, sometimes I feel guilt about shoveling on the mock, but
not today. Not even a little bit.
Nope.
So, keeping his focus on being an actor, he would study and apprentice at summer theaters in New York and Massachusetts. And by 1957, he was taking acting classes in New York City. For a while, he studied at the Neighborhood Playhouse School, which is a very famous school, apparently, didn't do the whole name because theater. Trying again. The Neighborhood Playhouse School of the Theater Under Sanford Meisner. That was the name of the school. I remember that Meisner guy in the early quote. This is the Meisner's, but...
The neighborhood theater of the theater under Sanford Meisner?
Kind of. The neighborhood playhouse school of the theater under Sanford Meisner.
Somebody signing a paycheck with this? Like, are you writing that shit out?
I told you there were a couple
theaters. E at the end.
You're going to have to get one of those big envelopes. It's going to take like 3 stamps just to like mail them a check.
I know,
check.
Dude.
Oh, can you imagine? This is back in the day when you actually
that
you did
buy
write
for the corner is like a foot long.
You did actually write yeah. up your checks to pay bills back in. Okay, so can you imagine writing that shit on
it's
the two
crazy.
Line?
It is crazy.
I'd tell somebody to come back with a name change. I'm not writing that out on your paycheck. Get out of here.
I'm sure they just abbreviated it to the play or the neighborhood playhouse school of the theater.
Okay, so now it sounds like a kindergarten.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying,
so this is where we send our children.
So yeah. Either way, it was supposedly pretty damn good, like acting school. And then
yeah, you know, I fuck with that. But when I pay my quarterlies, I actually write it out, United States Treasury, and like 4 times a year, I get to practice my
International Revenue Service.
Four times a year, I get to practice my cursive, and it's like I write, and then I do like the. You know, whatever, like the $97.31 or whatever. I write it all out. Because I figure if you write it in cursive with a shaky hand, they're not going to come for
well,
you.
I will say, this
guy's really old,
as
man.
A reformed, check writer, when I wrote my checks, I always wrote the name of the month all the way out. I didn't write like
no,
7.
No, eight. Sept.
I did like
no aug.
Yeah, no,
you write the whole goddamn thing.
February.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyhow, in 1959, he would meet and marry Catherine Dalla, D-A-L-L-A, Dixon Boyd. Catherine Dalla, Dixon Boyd.
No, that's too many names.
This is where our numbering system comes
in. She thinks
she's
cute.
This is number 1.
Whoa.
I told you there was something you would appreciate.
Few and far between, but I love people who've been married more than me.
Almost twice as many times. Actually, that's... because you're technically 2.5, twice as many times. Spoiler alert.
Wow.
So, this is marriage number 1.
Joan Crawford is
here's
risen
the crazy
from the grave.
Part, though. Here's the crazy part, though. So, it was 1959 they got married. The marriage would last until 1971.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's... a reasonable what? Length of time.
No, it's not. 12 years.
Especially in Hollywood, there's a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
Produced no children, as far as I can tell.
Why even bother getting married then? Why not just live together and just say it's going to make things so much easier?
But that it makes divorce way easier. I've done it. So, or don't even live together, at which point you just like take a handful of people's shit back and forth and leave it alone and leave. But
wow, Mr.
Relationship
Commitment.
Advice.
Wow, Mr. Commitment.
So again, produced no children. It seems to have been a relatively decent relationship and a calm divorce. It didn't look like it was craziness in the divorce. He would make his New York stage debut in 1961 in a play by Fernando Arrabal called They Put Handcuffs on Flowers.
He loveth the long name. They put handcuffs on flowers.
I kind of want to see this play. I'm sure it is not at all.
Only if it's
what
a flower
I want
child.
To see. Yeah, it's not at all what I want to see by the title, but I want to see what I want to see from the title.
I don't know. This sounds like an extension of the effect of gamma rays on Man in the Moon marigolds. You know, that's what it sounds like. Like, just give it a long name and people already think they've got some value reading it. Maybe they'll buy a ticket. Yeah.
So the play was relatively short run and he may have been an understudy, but it seems he actually ended up taking the stage because the main character player was
nope
the
fuck the out
last. Well no they ended up ill at the very last minute and so it seems like he did perform
that
the
wasn't
of the run.
He wasn't sick, he was running,
who knows. I mean, they put handcuffs on flowers and stuff, obviously not on the actors. He would then make his first Broadway appearance in 1969 in a play called Red, White, and Maddox. What else? In the years between these two appearances, he would get on stage as often as he could, often in Shakespeare plays. Then one of these, he played Oberon to Meryl Streep's Helena in A Midsummer Night's Dream. So if you know anything about that play, those are both pretty major roles and very close together. He was coming up slowly, but he has sights set higher. In 1974, he would remarry. Remember, he got divorced in 71. He would remarry. This is number two. This time to actress Kay Thornburg. Thornburg with an O in the Berg part. Thornburg.
Ooh. Ooh. Sounds a little bit more threatening, but yet I'm still
She's going to assimilate him.
I'm totally uninterested.
This marriage would also last more than a
decade. I'd rather masturbate with sandpaper.
We've been through that. This
actually, this is what I'm doing right now. I'm masturbating with sandpaper right now.
This marriage would also last more than a decade, ending in 1987. So this time about 12 or 13 years, right? And again, producing no kids, and seemed again to be an amicable relationship and divorce. So we're moving through them, but we're being kind to people, right? In 1975, he would get his first role on the silver screen as Max Tabor in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, obviously starring Jack Nicholson. He had already been...
Also called the Prelude to Taxi. Since, like, Danny DeVito's in that, too. It's like a
is DeVito in it, too?
Oh, yeah.
Martini. He's Martini. Martini, this is a cigarette. This is a hotel. This is garbage.
No.
That's because, like, Martini...
I didn't rewatch it. I just watched some Lloyd clips from it.
Martini grabs... They're somehow gambling on Monopoly, and they're using cigarettes as a hotel. And Martini, a.k.a. Danny DeVito, breaks one in half to make two hotels. And Nicholson is like, well, now that's a worthless cigarette. So he's like, Martini, this is a hotel. This is nothing. And hotel. And it's really weird because, like, it's DeVito's, like, only, like, non-loud part, and he's doing it all, he's doing the crazy with all facial expressions.
Which he's actually pretty good at.
Yeah, he's really good.
Which doesn't
really
show enough in a lot of his other things. But worked well as Penguin.
Yeah, but works really well in that, yeah. And, like that whole cast and...
You know what? We should have done Danny DeVito instead.
Or Cuckoo's Nest, or Jack Nicholson,
or quite literally anything,
or mental institutions. That would have been
good. Yeah. We did Willowbrook.
I think we did Monopoly.
We did Monopoly.
So we have done everything possible, and we've got too many ideas to save this, and we still are gonna trudge through it, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
So get to trudging.
We're troopers. So yeah, he got the job in One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest. He had already been acting professionally for almost 20 years at this point, so it was not a swift rise, like it was a slow burn. But the role and his way of playing the quirky character really gave him kind of a niche that he could fill in. And this is where he starts to get credit and move on and become what we know of Christopher Lloyd, because, oh yeah, that guy plays a crazy person really well.
Yeah.
And it becomes very apparent in this film, as you mentioned, the whole cast. Like, everybody, I looked at the cast, and there's a bunch of famous people in that fucking
movie.
Yeah, there are. And most of them play lunatics.
Really well.
Most of the time.
But, like, that movie was sort of like the, at the time it came out, it was kind of like the intellectual Lawrence of Arabia of its day. Like, everybody and their brother saw Lawrence of Arabia, and, like, Cuckoo's Nest was like, the thing that I think it followed Arabia, but it was the one where, like, it was the second movie I can remember where it was just like, if you hadn't seen that movie, you were nobody. Like people would just be like off on you. If
Cuckoo's
you
Nest
seen.
Was.
Yeah, yeah. If yeah, you hadn't
well,
seen
I mean,
it,
Clockwork Orange was one of those kind of movies. Like, if you haven't seen
nah,
it,
that,
you
no, that was that was like kids. But like, like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was like this big, like, intellectual, like, you know, Village Voice, you know, thing where it was just like, you have to see it, and if you haven't seen it,
you don't know what fork to use if you didn't watch this movie.
Exactly. And it's just like, oh, it was so meaningful. And yeah,
so anyhow, Nicholson's character in that is one of your social media hints. The Cuckoo's Nest role helped him get gigs in Hollywood. He would do a few small spots on TV and make the occasional appearance in a movie here and there. He was still making his money on the stage mostly, but the transition was starting to happen. You could see that he was moving into Hollywood and off of the New York stages. By 1978, he had gotten his foot in the door. So he's like, what, 30 years old? Yeah, he's 30 years old because he was born in 39. So he's roughly 40 years old. Here I am doing math. Guys, do the math.
Okay, what year is it?
For me, please.
Mid-30s.
He was born in 39.
Go. Okay, we can't do this. I can't do this.
He's almost 39 40. Years old.
He's almost 40. Thank you.
Your thinking gives me tinnitus.
So tedious.
He would audition for the role of Jim Ignatowski, a character born in Spokane, Washington, and, quote, the living embodiment of the 60s. End quote. His performance was a drugged out and spacey cab driver would be exactly the break he needed to play more weirdos. People loved the persona he invented, and his near method acting would help that along, keeping the odd behavior he had started to become known for and the reason he was on this week's list of odd individuals. He won 2 Emmys for this role.
I gotta tell you, I've taken more than my fair share of cabs. That if I ever got into one with that cat,
getting the fuck out.
Oh God, I would walk to New York before I would take a cab down the block with that fucker.
It always fascinates me when I see cabs on the fucking freeway. But cab on the freeway, you might be with Ignatowski because he's the right kind of guy to take that. Like, because he did that as a character. Like, where'd you go? I don't know, fucking Boston or some shit, which is only like what, a 2.5 hour drive, but still less than that.
Okay, we're going on.
Look at this face. Do you think I want to explain? Is this the Rupert wants to explain geography to Tyler face? Is that what this face is?
No, but I was hoping Rupert might. The taxi role kept him busy, but he was busy taking other roles, most smaller in film. This led to him in 1984, which was a really good year for Lloyd. He was John Big Booty. In Buckaroo Banzai, which is your other social media hint.
That was actually a good movie.
I love that movie.
That was a good movie.
Madly.
With RoboCop?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peter Weller.
Yeah.
And dude, again, talk about the cast. Like, this is another cast that's over the top, because it's got, another guy that was on our list.
Goldblum. I don't even know what you call Goldblum's those movies. It was sort of like Brazil. It was one of those Gonzo movies. Is that, I don't know what you call it.
But it was a B-movie, but on purpose.
Really good. Really good.
Really a great, I love
it. Unlike most B-on-purpose movies, mm-hmm. which suck.
Lithgow's in it. It's a crazy cast. I do have a mad love for that movie. In 1984, he played... In 1984, he played John Big Booty in Buckaroo Banzai, as well as being a Klingon in Star Trek III, Search for Spock. This job he got at the suggestion of his friend Leonard Nimoy. He was also in National Lampoon's Joy of Sex. So that's 84.
A rather regrettable feature.
Fair. Fair. I will say that about most National Lampoon movies. I didn't love them when they were new, and they don't hold up. But
well, they're not of your time, but like
the thing, they kind of were. Like Vacation is totally of my time.
Yeah. Okay. So that says it. But like, National Lampoon's The Job of Sex was brilliant. You know, when it came out, because it was like, you know, mocking the whole
Joy of Sex book.
It was mocking the whole sexual liberation thing, where it was just like, you know, it's not really that great. Yeah. And it was kind of like, it was actually sort of like punk rock before its time. You know, because it was sort of, you know, making mock of the Joy of Sex, early 70s, swinger, like everybody, like, you know, the G-spot thing, all that stuff, Fear of Flying, all that stuff. It was making fun.
Erica Jong plays
making
and you're just
fun of all that early 70s stuff, like in a way that predates the mid-70s punk disaffection with sexuality, where they were just like, well, it's kind of boring, you know, and there's only so much to say about it and that kind of thing. I mean, you can see
that was,
it.
No, that was enough, sir. Thank you.
You can
1984.
You can see it like in like various documentaries where they're just like deprecating the hallowed ground of sexuality as being some great thing, and it's like
1984
really,
was obviously a decent year with all those movies because all of them made some decent money.
Oh, it's all kind of boring,
and that brings us in. It is boring, especially in the way you're explaining it. All of this was progress, but 1985 was possibly his biggest year. In that year, he would become a pop culture icon, and the role of Emmett Doc Brown in Back to the Future. Jim and Gutowski, but Doc Brown, seriously, he's reprised the role as a cameo. It's a pop culture icon.
I think it is the one contestant for, you know, a dead body that took longer to bury than Queen Elizabeth.
Oh, God.
Dude, seriously, do you need a break?
We could use some AC.
You're real fucking downer right now.
It's that bad. It's just like...
He's reprised enough that even one of the,
it's
the
just
Destination
so
Unknown
done.
Things that I watch, they did a 3-part special with Doc Brown trying to track down the original, the first DeLorean that they used in the first one.
Yeah.
And then, like, I think it was Top Gear did a bunch of specials on can you even get a DeLorean to 88 miles an hour? The answer is no. And we covered him, and the answer is no, you cannot. They topped out at, like, 68, which is terrifying. You couldn't even freeway drive a car.
And it's like the number of DeLoreans that out there that claim to be the one used in Back to the Future is roughly the same as the number of people who claim to be in attendance at the original Woodstock. It's like, it's such a load of shit. You know, it's like it wasn't that great a movie. It was like, you know, mildly funny. It was like, I don't know, it was like the Goonies or something.
It's definitely revisitable.
It's like,
and
okay.
It was like okay,
but in terms of like really funny movies, I don't know.
It was the family movie. It was one of those things where it's like, hey, you know what? This one is going to be acceptable for your kids. You can still put it in the VCR.
Yep.
You know, you can have family night. You can do these things with this.
Everybody
film.
Can enjoy it. It's clean enough. It's
enough. And I was okay with it until Facebook, where whenever any idiot posts something like, anybody knows what this is, and there's 20. It's the flux capacitor, and it's like, really, you're making this joke for the 20. You're making this joke.
I just had a thought. The flux capacitor looks a lot like the Tesla logo, which looks a lot like an IUD. Interesting path to go down.
I hate you.
Quick, well, right about.
I hate this whole topic.
So, a quick side note on this film.
I don't know
on
why
Back
I'm trying
to the Future
to
is that
in.
They filmed almost half of the movie with Eric Stoltz, if you didn't know, as Marty McFly, and then scrapped it and switched Michael J. Fox. For what it's worth, our guy Lloyd was up for a Saturn Award for this role, but he was beat out by Roddy McDowell.
Planet of the Apes, probably.
That's what I'm thinking.
So it's sort of like that guy, like, you know, who's the mafia guy that they switched out for Sheen in Apocalypse Now? Sport from Taxi Driver. Who's that guy?
I don't remember, but you're right. Yeah. But Martin Sheen was a great switch out because
yeah, it was a great
that fucking mental health breakdown that he had. Where he
Harvey Keitel. Harvey Keitel. Jesus, I was going to shit a brick if I didn't get that thing out. But, like, yeah, it's like the switching out of Harvey Keitel, which is, like, the weirdest casting ever. I can't really quite think. Although I want to see that version. I want to see that version. It's like, I'm not really saying it would be worse. It would be very different.
But the Martin Sheen breakdown is one of the best scenes in the movie, in my opinion.
But I want to see the Harvey Keitel breakdown.
You mean the Vincent D'Onofrio breakdown? No, that was Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, that was Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, Vietnam era war film.
Dude.
Mental breakdown.
Add D'Onofrio to the list. Jesus. Talk about guys. I have some broad spectrum work. Anyway, so the same year, we're in 1985.
No.
Lloyd.
No, please let's not do that.
Lloyd scored a role in yet another cult classic, Clue, playing Professor Plum in this movie. Although it's loved now, it did not do as well as they had hoped at the box office, even if they had gone to the length of filming 4 different endings and distributing them at random. So you never knew what ending you would see when you went to whatever theater you went to.
The Prelude to Colored Vinyl.
Yeah, it kind of was. I did enjoy it because I did go see it at the theater and had friends that saw it at another theater, and we got to compare endings. And we didn't even have the internet. Somehow we knew we were supposed to do that shit. It must have been magazines or something.
Well, it was advertised.
Was it? It must. Yeah. Okay, maybe that's it. But yeah, it was like, all right, who did it in your one?
It wasn't a bug. It was a feature. As a, you know, when indecisiveness in the editing room.
It was a feature.
Yeah.
This is, however, since we're going down this path, another film that I would say the casting is fucking amazing. It's so good with Susan Sarandon and Tom Waits' wife, Ellen, whatever.
DeGeneres. Ellen DeGeneres.
No. Tim Curry was in that movie as the butler. It was another really wonderfully cast movie.
Tom Waits was married to Ellen DeGeneres.
No.
Yes, he was.
No, he's not.
He was.
You're a liar.
How do you think
this
he has all
those? This is a fact-based podcast. God damn it!
How do you think he has all those sad songs?
He gave birth to Jewel?
Yeah.
So, shortly after his second divorce...
Well, he thought that she was a dyke and she'd get a gravelier voice than he would, and he'd be the pretty one, and then that didn't happen.
Then he killed Melissa Etheridge's way through the world?
That's what happened there.
Jesus. So, shortly after...
He made fun of tragedy.
Shortly after
his... sad story.
...second divorce, somewhere around 1989, Lloyd would enter his third marriage, this time to Carol Vanek. This would end in 1991, so the marriage time frame is shortening. Again, no kids. So three marriages, no kids.
Who the hell is Carol Vanek?
Christopher Lloyd's ex-wife.
What, she run a muffler shop? What?
I kind of doubt it.
All right. Oh, we hear something interesting.
Did you find something, John?
No, that's just your internet shit.
It's new internet.
Yeah, I don't
have
any.
You gotta burn it in, man.
Yeah, I guess so.
It takes 500 hours.
Are you connected to the correct one?
Yeah.
So the next big hit would be Judge Doom in Who Framed Roger Rabbit in 1988. This movie was so popular that Disneyland built a ride around it. I actually went on it twice. He even voiced his role for the Disney attraction.
I'm still trying to... You went to Disneyland?
I've been a number of times to Disneyland and Disney World.
I thought it would be
none of this is going to make me sound cooler.
I thought it would be too
one
commercial.
Time
no,
was
we
to
don't
make
need
sure
no.
My kid
I'm
went.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Retraction.
One time was to make sure my kid got to go. That's the only one that makes me sound any cooler. The rest is very band campy.
Close pod bay doors, Hal. Close the pod bay doors. Didn't mean to release.
So he followed that role.
Rather die in space.
He followed the Roger Rabbit roll up with Uncle Fester in the reboot of Addams Family in 1991. Although I kind of questioned the casting on that one, I think he really nailed it. It was weird that he played a hunched over, shorter guy, being the relatively tall guy that we all know, but he kind of did it. This also became a franchise and it kept him employed for a couple of years to come. Having moved mainly to the big screen, he was doing less TV work, but continued to appear in shows, most often in smaller short parts. These include Amazing Stories, which... if you have not watched, I loved that series. Road to Avalonia, which is a Canadian series that he got an Emmy for. And Dead Ahead, the Exxon Valdez disaster.
Oh, well, that sounds good.
That's going to be a really uplifting film.
That sounds good.
I know what you're going to be watching tonight.
Yeah. Well, I think it's astonishing that there's not more movies made of the, you know. I mean, because, like, the best take on the Exxon Valdez was Waterworld.
Right?
I love that. And it's like, I feel like Exxon Valdez should pop up more than it does.
Right?
You know? Because it's like, there's
something about it.
Like,
blown up nuclear facilities that were near the coast since then. So there's other things to pay attention to.
Yeah, but they're not as good. There's just something singular about, like, a gigantic oil tanker
with a captain that's falling asleep.
A drunk captain just plowing into, I don't know what they hit. They hit an iceberg or something. I don't know what the fuck happened. But, like, there's just something about, like, drunk cat, just...
And
Water
like
World.
Companies like Dawn giving out a whole bunch of dish soap to wash
that's where,
in and shit.
That's where Dawn made its bones.
Yes.
Yeah. They made
the comedy of errors in the cleanup of it was the the horrible thing, because it actually did more damage to the environment with the cleanup efforts than if they just let Mom Nature take care of it.
But the thing of it is like, right around the time the Exxon Valdez happened was, like, right around the time, like, Lil Roop got involved in, like, goop and, like, really messy materials and stuff. And I was like, well, you know what? They cleaned up all those little birds with that Dawn. I should get some Dawn. And it does. It works really well. And I'm just, and it's like the only, like, name brand thing where it's like, ever since then, I don't know when the hell this thing happened.
Oil-based lubricants?
I think Zeppelin was still together
I graduated high school, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You want the,
like,
secret?
I have not bought any dishwashing liquid other than Dawn since then.
You want the secret to getting rid of oil-based lubricants?
Dawn. Yeah. Not sponsored by, but... I for what it's worth, I didn't look up to see if we can find that film on the internet. Maybe John can do that while we're rolling on.
Or no.
No, or not.
Waterworld?
No.
The
Exxon Valdez disaster.
I don't know why we'd need to even do it.
After ending his third marriage in 1991.
You know, that'd be cooler if people started making the Waterworld boat instead of that dopey DeLorean. That would be cooler.
I bet that fucker went 88 miles an hour.
If people had recreations of the Waterworld boat instead of some stupid DeLorean, you know, that'd be neat.
It's tough to own a catamaran in the first place.
Says Mr. Knowledge.
It's the only sailing thing I think I got right in the last decade.
No.
It was a catamaran. It was. Anyway, so after ending his marriage in 1991, he would meet and marry Jane Walker Wood, a screenwriter.
Jane Walker Wood?
Walker Wood.
Walker Wood. Is that like what?
I can't. Did she date Chuck Norris?
I don't know, but she was a screenwriter, so there's every possibility.
She went to Texas.
Like it's like a mandated mocking name. It's like if you named your kids Walker Texas Ranger. It's like you're just inviting.
I'd like to give thanks to God for my two sons, Walker and Texas Ranger.
Yeah. It's just like. Jane Walkerwood?
Yes, sir.
Is it whack-a-mole? Walkerwood.
This marriage, which was number three, would
have with a name like that.
I don't know. It had a bit more staying power because it lasted until 2005.
Oh, because she got crazy.
That's a 13.
Because she did the nasty.
Again, no kids.
That's the benefits of
because they have a flux capacitor.
That's the benefits of being very the nastier you are, the less chances of procreation. You guys out there remember
in the butt,
that.
No babies.
You guys remember that? You get into some crazy dress
Jesus
up.
Says it's okay.
You get into some crazy dress up stuff, and you know, a lot of rope. Some pot. You can't have kids. You can't get pregnant if somebody's tied up. You know that.
You're just trying to sell product, yo.
I'm telling you, that's true. That's true. You know?
You can't get pregnant if it's synthetic.
Yeah.
I was in a store recently with the lady that I see occasionally and pointed at a gag and said, see that? Rupert invented that. It's kind of a cool feeling to know that guy.
I still can't understand if you were like, thinking that would, like, move you up on the getting laid spectrum or move you down.
I was just trying to get a feeling for where
she was
at
being
there, right?
Given the fact that
he was one of the reasons we went.
So you were
like, what does she show interest in?
You were, like, depth sounding there.
Well, we walked in.
Seeing if you get a ping back.
She listens to this. I'm in so much trouble. I hope she doesn't listen to this. Anyway.
No, she doesn't listen to this.
We probably not.
Well, she has sense.
She still likes me, so she probably doesn't listen to this.
That's right.
but we walked in, and we walked past the flogger and like the little horse buggy whip kind of area. She goes, oh, I got a whole fucking barn full of those. I was like, okay.
Well, that's the sad thing about those things is like the horse buggy whip, it's totally impractical. Because
it's only practical when you have short ceilings or a short stroke length.
It's totally impractical because they're very long. That's the downside. The upside is like they make the best sound of anything you could beat somebody with.
I was talking about the short ones, not the ones that have the long fiberglass shaft ones. And then the single tail on the end. And
nobody cares about the short ones. It's like that sound is like just so good. I love it.
You don't have a whip if you're not looking for the sound.
Yeah. That's like that's like the whole thing with
the sound is why you have a whip.
That's right. That's right.
You're doing it wrong.
So now So now a Hollywood star and in his mid to late 40s, Lloyd continued to get
roles in movies. How's he still 40? This guy's ageless.
He was like 40 for a billion years.
He's mathing.
I am mathing.
He was like
it's not math. Don't. Because then he's going to start thinking about math again, and we don't need that in our life.
Staying busy with the franchises, staying busy with the franchises he was involved in, he would also do some voiceover work with Disney Productions. Basically, that was where most of that came from. One of these was the DuckTales movie. So if you've seen that, you heard him. In addition to this, he played Rasputin in 1997's Anastasia. Or Anastasia, however you want to say it, but I like Anastasia. But, like, Christopher Lloyd as Rasputin, I think I might need to see that movie. That's pretty good.
But the voice. Just the voice. Right?
No. This was a live action movie.
It was
movie.
A live thing. Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Sounds vaguely interesting, but...
It sounds interesting. Like, Anastasia is a crazy story, and if he's playing Rasputin, I could see that. I could watch it. He also was in Eight Men Out and The Dream Team, which were funny because, A, both those were baseball stuff related, and, B, in The Dream Team, he was back in the mental ward. He was in Dennis the Menace, Angel in the Outfield, another baseball movie.
Wow, a psychotic baseball movie. Wonder I never heard of it.
If they would have just stopped at psychotic, you probably would have been attracted. But then it had to go baseball, and then it's like, okay, nope, my boner just went limp.
Yeah, it's
well, by my opinion, Angel of the Outfield was a total flop, but whatever. He was in the Radioland Murders and The Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead, which I really
that was a great movie.
I really should revisit because
that was a great movie. I love that movie. He's actually done something worthwhile. I'm stunned. I forgot him in that movie, but that's a fan. Yeah. Andy Garcia.
This is the first doing this research was the first time I thought about this movie since I saw
it. You never saw it? Oh, you did see it.
I saw it as an art house kid, yeah.
But you remember it as a great movie, right?
Yeah, I remember it. I really enjoyed it.
So yeah, that's a fantastic movie. Yeah.
Man. Yeah, he does have a knack for, I mean, you just mentioned Andy Garcia. I mean,
he works with greats.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, it's like one of those things
I totally don't remember his part in the movie, but...
Yeah, there, it's all these things where it's like, hey, you know what? Yeah, I worked with him. If you were to take just a walk down his hall of pictures, like him next to Andy Garcia and him next to De Niro and, you know, all of these other people, it's like DeVito and, like, really, dude, you did really work with...
He worked with a whole bunch of...
Holy shit!
He worked really with a whole bunch of people. It's astonishing nothing good came out of it.
Well, it's... So by the end of the 90s, he was an established actor. He was established as a character actor, mainly for his looks that he could easily be pushed in a cartoony way. Like they frequently put him in cartoon kind of roles. In fact, in Roger Rabbit, exactly in a cartoon role, and as well as his extreme facial expressions, which apparently he learned at that acting school we talked about way back in the beginning. He would play in the reboot of My Favorite Martian. And even play himself in Man on the Moon, the Andy Kaufman biopic, and relive some of the filming of Taxi. So he actually replayed his role as Jim Ignatowski in that movie. So that's, again, talking about that vampire doesn't age shit. When you can play a role that you played 40 years earlier and still pull it off. Here we go. His career seems to have been halted by his character and notoriety. But he has had some reoccurring roles in TV shows like Roseanne and NCIS, as well as still doing voiceover work in movies for, like Despero and a film that, which was a film that broke my kid. Despero would really broke my kid. Anyhow, he also has been a voiceover or voice actor in long running series as an evil hacker called Cyber Chase.
It's actually pretty cool. Cyber Chase is one of those things where it's like PBS doing something right again. It's the kid, it's
they run around and they have to solve problems, but they teach you the Pythagorean theorem. They teach you, like, they teach you shit. You just don't realize you're learning.
So I should watch this and get some maths?
Yeah, you can get some maths. We will do beautiful maths.
I hate maths. I hate
Especially around me.
It's the second thing where like everybody is like, you know, it's like, you know, back in the 70s, it was like there were these jack-offs who started calling gas petrol in the United States, and it's like, I want to punch them. And then there were people in the United States, like right around the 80s, who started leaving off the definite article when referring to a hospital. And I wanted to punch them in the face.
Should I just leave the room?
And now for the last 5 years, these jack-offs who couldn't do algebra saying maths. And it's like,
I should leave the room soon.
Maths.
You know, I'll tell you what. Here's the deal. You can start saying maths if you can start doing algebra.
If I can start doing maths.
If you can't do algebra, please refrain from saying maths.
So,
in North America, you sound like a douche nozzle.
In 2016, he would marry his fifth.
You're doing your maths on a typewriter.
Yeah. Fucking douchey way of saying things. What the hell is that? You know, why don't you like just like imitate like, you know, I don't know, French accent or something.
Well, why don't you try not to be so American?
Do that. Actually, the most American thing in the world is affecting a foreign thing just because out of this attitude that, like, you know,
the fake British accent.
Yeah,
we do whatever
it's,
we want.
It's just,
we're a melting pot, damn it.
It's so fucking lame.
We are melting. Good Lord. In 2016 he would marry his fifth wife. I think I misnumbered the last one as third, but it was actually fourth. The fifth wife is named Lisa Loiancono, or Loiancono. Loiancono.
Well, you spelling it isn't going to make it any better.
Sounds like she says maths.
It's very Italian sounding. She
could be foxy with that name.
She was the realtor who helped him sell his Monticello home in 2012. Monticello, whatever.
Not
Monticello.
Foxy. Not foxy.
And it's so, well, I don't know. That's a hoity-toity area of properties. She might be a pretty girl. He sold that Monticello home so they could move to Montana. Yeah, not bad at all. Definitely can see the Italian roots.
He is definitely
significantly older.
Okay, for him, she's hot.
Yeah, I mean,
all right. Otherwise, she looks like the manager in Kim's Convenience.
I mean, you got to look at it and say, okay, well, honey, it's nice that you came out with your father today.
Well, I mean, he's still 40, right?
For fuck's sake, man. I hope you were to age like that.
Honestly, he's born a year before my dad. So anyhow, he'd marry his fifth wife, Lisa.
I'm the same age as your dad.
She was the realtor who helped him sell... No, you're not. Who had helped him... Biologically. You may feel that way. You may feel that way today.
Biologically.
Anyhow, the home that they had sold in Monticello was devoured by the 2008 wildfire, and he rebuilt it only to sell it. So, like, right, like during the sale, apparently, he had to rebuild, or they rebuilt it. Either way, the couple still seemed to be together. One of his most notable recent appearances was in the film Going in Style. Leaning into his age, this film was about a bunch of retired guys robbing a bank. It also featured Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman, and Alan Arkin. To this day, I see no reports of any children.
Those are the guys you call upon when you're making a film about retired guys doing a bad thing. That's who you call, Little Miss Sunshine. You know.
So bring it.
Where's Harvey Keitel at in there?
He has the good sense to stay out of it.
Right?
Yeah.
So bringing it back to just actually a couple minutes ago, I think this guy is one of the best supporting actors of all time. He has been in an amazing amount of roles in movies that I love, and alongside movie or role or alongside people that are the biggest star. Like, okay, maybe we didn't say Tom Cruise, but the number of stars that we went through that he's worked side by side with is incredible. And he never seemed to really shoot for, I'm going to be that leading role. I'm going to play the weird side role. Oftentimes, once when we were discussing this, that we had forgotten, like, oh shit, I forgot he was in that. And he does it so well. I think that he is a very effective part of my enjoyment of movies, even if his story is a little dull. And maybe doesn't get enough respect for that.
Well, I was just getting a little wild hair at my ass here, and it maybe looked like the secret to my success had Christopher Lloyd in it.
Really?
And Tom Cruise. So, he's been there forever. And
that was a Michael J. Fox movie, too, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, one of the, I don't know. But one way or another, you're right. You're dead right on it. Supporting actor, I mean, he's got that role buttoned down. He's been able to do whatever he's pretty much wanted to do. He's had fun doing it. I mean, he's played this quirky character, and he's been able to be in movies and act on stage and just kind of do his thing. I mean, he was successful enough that he was able to rebuild his house. I would like to just own a house. He was able to rebuild one in a hoity-toity area of California. Okay, so he's doing something right. You know, everybody recognizes him. Yeah, I know this was a little on the shallow side, but fuck it. I mean, it's on the shallow side because he was doing something. He didn't do anything really stupid other than act.
All right, so I was like, I enjoyed him. I didn't think he was the be-all in it. You know, I wasn't one of those people, like, because Taxi was theoretically filmed in front of a live audience. I don't know if it really was, but whenever, you know, Jim Ignatowski would come walking out there, everybody go crazy, and I'd be like, he's going to say the same thing he always does, you know, some sort of burnout thing. And, you know, I thought it was really cool in the beginning, but after a while it got kind of boring. I thought Back to the Future was one of the worst movies ever. I thought it was totally unfunny, and I just didn't give a crap. But, like, his lesser, you know, his, like, supporting role stuff, like, you guys got it, like, dead on. It's like, yeah, as a supporting actor in terms of, like, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and that kind of thing. What was the Denver? Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead. One of the greatest movies ever. I love that movie. I think he's a henchman in that movie. I could be wrong.
Like I said, I got to revisit
it. I could be wrong, but I think he's like a deadly assassin henchman guy in that. And,
next time and I'm at the thrift store, you know, I'm buying the DVD.
Yeah, yeah. Great movie. Great movie. You know, but like, I kind of don't really give a shit about this guy. I like Taxi mostly because it was filmed around the corner from my house on Bleecker and between Bleecker and Hudson on Charles Street. That was the cab thing. A little tidbit for you guys. The beginning where the cab rolls out and you hear a doo-doo-doo-doo with a little fluty Jethro Tull thing. That was actually the same taxi garage where Robert De Niro's Taxi Driver was filmed. Same thing. Same place.
This sounds like something that friends do.
Well, I thought we were friends.
I'm extremely uncomfortable with that.
I know. Let me give you a hug.
Thank you.